From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Wednesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this afternoon. A little camera trouble. We'll get it fixed in 1 second. But you're in segment number two for the day. We're going to talk to Chris Lee of VandySports.com. Commodores headed to Oxford for a baseball series this weekend. At least one of the four pitchers we expected to see, we've been excited about for a while, Gunnar Hoglund, out for the year with UCL replacement, repair, reconstruction. I don't know. I don't really know the detail there. But either way, Hoglund out for the year. We'll see what Jack Leiter's status is. Adam Sparks, the Tennessean, a minute ago said that Tim Corbin has not made a designation yet, that still says that he is progressing toward pitching, however, would not commit to him pitching this weekend. So we'll talk about that and more with Chris Lee here in a little bit on the show. A show brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Get the SpeedPass Plus out, download it, use it, earn points, and when you earn points, you save money there with all Blue Sky locations in Mississippi. Also get your $5.69 lunch special every single weekday, two sides of bread, 32-ounce drink, and again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call it, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for, he'll send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours. Right to the bottom line, no hassle, no haggle. You get your quote, and the rest is up to you. You can shop it around. You can do what I've done. What I recommend that you do, and then hop into a Clark Ford today. You will love the service. You'll love the product. The people at Clark Ford want to be your car guy. They want to be your truck guy. They'll prove to you what that means when you make the call. 662-257-1900. Chris Lee and other guests will join us on the Rafters Music and Food Hotline. You people have been asking me this question for a few weeks now. I can answer it. Rafters on the Water at Sardis Lake is now open Wednesday through Friday at 5 p.m., Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m.
Okay.
Frozen margaritas, daiquiris, great food, amazing waterfront views. It was a hot spot last summer. I suspect it will be a hot spot again this summer. And starting today, it's open. You can also go to Rafters Music and Food on the Square as well.
I mean, summer's here. That's what that means. We're here. We kind of made it a little bit.
You know, I wrote this in my mailbag today. The whole baseball debate, the two debates, is Ole Miss invested, over-invested or not, and the Fire Bianco debate, those are rites of passage into summer here.
I saw you said that earlier.
When those are raging, you know June's right around the corner.
I saw you say that.
Would you argue?
No, it's probably fair.
I mean, we do probably it every year.
What we also do every single year is criticize the NCAA over something. It's women's golf, so not as much hot water, not a huge deal. But the Baton Rouge Regional canceled today after 2 days of rain. It was going to be bad no matter what they did. I was told that the course was playable. The NCAA said that it was not in championship condition to be played. There are 18 teams there. Top six advanced to the NCAA championships in Arizona. There was tons of rain on Monday. Probably could have got it there yesterday. Definitely could have played today.
So those kids sat down there all week
to not hit a shot.
To not get a shot. And for 12 teams, their season ends
like that.
Through no.
So what they did was they just took the top six seeds. Those top six seeds will advance to the NCAA championships in Scottsdale, Arizona, here in a few weeks. Ole Miss, obviously, in that. They're number five in the country, the number two seed in the LSU regional. Alabama and LSU, other SEC teams also that are in that regional.
Could they not have played this weekend?
To me, it's not a very tight squeeze that you would have time to do that. Yeah, I don't know why not. If it was going to be held to one round or less, there was no really good answer because, frankly, one round screws the favorites because in golf, anything can happen in one round of golf, especially on a wet course where it's kind of whatever.
And you're supposed to play three rounds?
Yeah, three rounds.
Well, then why not do one today, one tomorrow?
or even two tomorrow.
Or two tomorrow.
They can play 36 holes in a day. It's not going to hurt anybody.
You know where I'm going to go with this. I finish your thing, and then I'll do
Well, no, that's it. My point being...
It's the shitty thing about being old is that your takes, even though they're right, are old.
The team screwed the most, Houston, Miami, and probably Mississippi State, probably the three that are looking up today going, oh my God, it was right there, like in the rain and the whatever. No, they could have played. Definitely just threw a towel in today. Like I saw Bethany Nichols, really good golf writer. She's there. The Miami coach had walked the course and taken videos of the holes, and there was no standing water. It was playable. Go ahead.
That's what really bugs me about the NCAA. It's a consistent thing. I sort of go to my Tim Corbin rant when he talked about Ole Miss and Arkansas. And he said to friends, he didn't say this publicly, but he told friends, are we in this for the student athletes or not? Because we say we are. Is that really what we're in it for? Because if you're really in it for the student athletes, you don't make those girls sit down there and then send 12 sets of girls home without getting to compete.
Yeah.
If you're really in it for them, not for the money, not for the budgets.
Because if you go, hey, we're going to just expand this thing out a couple days, who says no? I mean.
Chase.
Yeah.
I don't play golf.
Yeah.
I'm not a governing person. And I can come up with the solution right here in no time flat. What it tells you is they don't give a damn about the kids. That's why people like me look at them and go, you're the biggest bunch of hypocrites in the world. You don't care about the kids. And when I say that, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about the athletics directors at Ole Miss and Mississippi State and LSU, et cetera. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the NCAA governing body. They don't care. They don't care about the kids. I read, it was either your tweet or you were retweeting somebody.
Yeah.
Girls in tears.
Yeah, Bethany Nichols, her tweet.
The tears should be because we came a shot short, or tears of joy because we pulled off the upset and we're going to Arizona. Well, the tears should not be because, well, they just said that the course can't be played. Screw it. Go home. Season's over. After sitting around in hotel rooms, I'm sure having to play all sorts of COVID grab ass over the course of the last few days just for the theater of the NCAA crap.
Oh, they get up this morning being told they're going to play. It doesn't rain anymore, and they don't play. I mean, come on. Because, like, if you really, really cared, I don't know logistics exactly, but even if that course goes, hey, you've got to get the hell out of here, somebody will take you. I don't know. Figure it out. Like, just call somebody down the road. Like, just play the tournament somewhere. I mean, at the end of the day, nobody can go, hey, well, you know, we got screwed because they made us play golf. Well, no, that's kind of the point of you going and doing this wherever you do it.
They've played golf in weird conditions before. They're college golfers. You don't think they've ever played with a wet course?
Yeah, I would have had more issues with just one round than even making them play multiple days in wet conditions. Yeah, I mean, that it's an outside sport. It rains. It's windy. I mean, you don't have a situation where they go, hey, you know what? The wind's really up today. We're just going to call it off. Don't worry about it. We'll be out here tomorrow when it's a little more pristine for you guys.
Well, the next time you rope me into something, if it's even a brief whim, I can't play in these conditions. Give me a break, man. Come on. The kids earned the right to play. The girls, the women, the young women, whatever term you want me to use, earned the right to play. Am I right? They earned the right to play. Not everybody gets to go.
I get that it's an NCAA event. I get that they make the decision. I'm doing this in quotes. They would be playing golf today if LSU was the 7 seed and not the 1. My opinion.
And you might be right, but that's where the NCAA should be able to supersede that.
Yeah, I agree.
The NCAA should be able to go, no, we're playing. Because these kids, correct me if I'm wrong, you have to earn your right there.
Of course, yeah.
Feel bad for the kids from Mississippi State. What are the other schools? You know who I feel bad for? I feel bad for the kids like the 16, 17, 18 seeds.
They weren't going to advance, but this was their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This was what they got. This was they won their conference tournament for.
This is what they...
Like Quinnipiac was in it.
All the days that they went and played golf. Where is Quinnipiac, by the way?
I have no idea. I don't know. I feel like we've looked it up before on the show.
All the days that they've gotten up and gone
Connecticut. Hamden, Connecticut.
Connecticut. You think they played some cold golf?
Yeah.
All those days that they got up and froze their asses off to go play golf, to get ready for this, and you get it taken away? It's BS, man. It is. not about the competition. It's not about who wins. It's not about that. That's my problem with the NCAA and its complete hypocrisy is that all they talk about is the student athlete. They bring them up at the NCAA tournament. First, we're going to have Coach Smith from Rhode Island. He's going to speak, and then we'll hear from the student athletes. When they're done, all questions should be directed for the student athletes. We'll get back to Coach Smith after we've dismissed the student athletes because presumably they have studies to attend to here in the arena, and we want to make sure that we get them back to the hotel where they can resume their academic endeavors.
Yeah, look, the cutoff was probably after State was the 12 seed, and after that, I don't see any of these teams making the top six or having much of a chance. But no, this was their Super Bowl. Tulsa, Sam Houston State, Kennesaw State, East Tennessee State, Jacksonville State, and Quinnipiac. They rounded out the field.
Yeah, the kids from Jacksonville State getting to play at LSU in the NCAA tournament, it is their College World Series.
That was the goal.
They were there for that, and they dreamed of, hey, we can be Cinderella.
You know, Oregon State's the 7 seed. They don't advance because they missed a line by when they were just doing a bracket 2 weeks ago.
They'd earned the right to compete for it.
Yeah. Bama just slipped in right there.
But they did. They'd earned the right to compete for it. One of two things happens. You either earn it or you don't get there. And either way, there's closure, right?
Of course. Anyway, a couple weeks, I think, prior to the NCAA tournament. I don't know how many teams advance. It's like 24 or something. They cut it. They play 3 rounds, I believe, and then cut it to 8. And then they do a bracket match play for the national title, if anybody's curious. That's how that works. But nonetheless, Ole Miss baseball plays today against Little Rock. That game is at 4 o'clock. I think Mike's suspended. I still don't know 100% for sure, but I think he's suspended today after getting thrown out on Sunday in College Station. So we'll all find out together, but I think that's the case.
So if they lose, we can fire somebody else?
Well,
Who's the coach going to be? Clement? Or
Laff has typically looked like the head coach when this has happened in the past.
Okay. Nothing. I'd be the first. If they fall behind, I'm going to tweet fire Carl Lafferty.
I mean, I don't know the answer here, but I'm kind of will Mike still do the post game?
I would hope so.
I'm asking.
It's a great, well.
Surely, but I'm just talking. Just you and I right here together, just having a conversation.
It would be an out for him.
Well, I didn't see the game.
How could I possibly talk about a game that I didn't see?
Sammy asking if schools get reimbursed for expenses.
Fair question.
Yeah.
If I'm Quinnipiac, I'm sending a bill to somebody, I'll tell you that.
Somebody's paying for this thing. That's a lot of hotel rooms for 3 days. That's all the airfare.
We're going partying. Drinks on me. We'll figure it out later.
God, a coach coming to go in there to his team and go in there and stop playing.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Now, hey, we just weren't quite good enough. I know how hard we worked. We weren't quite good enough. Or going in and celebrating. Either one of those, that's what you prepare for. You know as a coach that there's going to come a moment. You know, Mike Bianco and I talked about that before the Louisiana Tech game earlier in the year. You know, you've got to end of every season. Most seasons end with a loss. It's not because the team didn't work hard or whatever, just because you ran into a better team. But this is crummy. It'd be one thing if, like, a hurricane had rolled through there and just demolished the course.
Like I said, it rained like hell on Monday. It did. It rained a ton on Monday, and it rained some yesterday morning at least, maybe a little more. But, again, today they could have hit some golf balls.
Could have played tomorrow. Could have played Friday.
Yeah. The only out there I'll give you is I don't know if the course just said, nope, you're not taking our whole week here. And I have no – I'm not saying that is true, not true. I have no idea.
But if you're really in it for the student athletes, you cut a check.
Figure it out. How do we do it?
How much?
Yeah. We need 48 more hours, whatever.
Give me a price.
Well, they're kind
it's not like Baton Rouge is destination golf. I mean, you know what I mean? Come on. I mean,
well, it's the
this
LSU,
isn't directed at you, but stop.
Well, and it's the LSU course. It's not like, yeah. It's even like, hey, they're playing in a really pretentious country club, and like, this is going to be a problem.
Right. I mean, there aren't guys all over the country that are like, I tell you what, I'm going to market.
If we can't play at U Club tomorrow.
If I can't play at LSU, Whistling Straits, Augusta.
U Club Baton Rouge.
Stop. You were going to have to call a few people and cancel some tee times.
You piss a few old men off.
Make it up to them.
Here's a head cover.
Your next scotch at the... It's on us. I'm sure, Ginger, that Baton Rouge is very lovely this time of year. I don't doubt that at all. I do question destination golf, Baton Rouge. That one, it doesn't quite roll off the tongue. I feel bad for the young women. I do. I genuinely do. I don't feel bad for the team that whatever. I feel bad for the young people that worked all year for a goal, achieve the goal, and have the goal taken away.
It's not the same as the teams that aren't advancing, but you even feel bad for the good teams.
Of course.
They still want to go play.
Yeah.
I mean, had you told Ole Miss, hey, you guys can go and just play and we'll see what happens, or we just go sit in a hotel room for 3 days, now let's play. Yeah.
Let's show people how good we are.
I mean.
Right?
Yeah. I mean.
You wrote the story about the girl talking about how they got off, they went to the chipping green and they noticed them. And
yeah.
Let's go play. Let's go be Billy Badass today.
Well, yeah, even Ole Miss this morning, I'm sure, got up going, no, it's 18 holes. We'll just win the 18 holes. All right, let's go play.
Yeah.
Fine, whatever.
Let's go finish first.
Yeah. But they get to play again. Again, you feel really bad for the other team.
Of course. I feel really bad no joke. I mean, I feel bad for the people at Quinnipiac and Jacksonville State and the other schools that got screwed. I do. I mean, I don't really – the coaches still get paid and stuff, but for the kids, the clock ticks. This might be your last opportunity to play golf competitively for your school.
Yeah.
For some of those kids, I guarantee you that happened today.
100%.
It ended today. Not because you shanked your tee shot off 14. And not because some girl at Ole Miss
drained a 40-footer and knocked you out. Yeah,
you know, they needed Eagle to win and by God got it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – you want to lose that way where you're like, hey, if I'm going to lose, she's going to have to knock
down Ole Miss 36. Men with Malloy a few years ago, they missed going to Nationals by one shot because a Kentucky player made it from like 150 yards on 18.
Yeah.
Sunk the approach and was like, what the hell?
And it happens. Competition, right?
I mean.
Competition.
Yeah.
And you'll tell that story for 30 years.
Yeah.
We were right there, but this son of a bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. They tell the story like, we saw it coming
now
down.
It's like, well, we wore our mask in the Hampton Inn for 4 days.
Yeah, played some ping pong.
But so we couldn't play golf.
Yeah.
So we flew back to Connecticut.
Yeah.
That's crap.
Yeah. We're going to talk to Chris Lee coming up here in a few minutes. Plenty of baseball. Again, Vanderbilt in town facing Ole Miss this weekend. Jack Leiter's status, obviously the big thing for Vanderbilt as they move forward. So we'll get to Chris in a second. First, today about Community Mortgage. Oxford, Memphis, Seto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. They're getting local underwriting and understand your market. A leader in condo financing, the float-down option, and more. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
Join Coach Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels in the vault this season. Season ticket packages start at $199, can be purchased by visiting OleMissTix.com. That's OleMissTix.com. Ole Miss Baseball back at Swayze this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as they host the Vanderbilt Commodores. Tickets remain, can be purchased by visiting OleMissTix.com. Also brought to you by Lamons Fine Jewelry, 1126 North Lamar Boulevard in Oxford. They've been serving the Oxford area for more than 73 years. Engagement rings, wedding rings, fine jewelry, pearls, watches, you name it, they've got it. It's the gold standard in fine jewelry. You can visit them at lamonsfinejewelry.com or call them at 662-234-2777. Also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air is the name you can trust. More than 50 years of professional HVAC experience in Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. You want to make sure that air conditioner is running in tip-top shape, and Comer can take care of that for you. 662-801-1777. Zach, Barry, and I taped a Soft Verbal podcast. It's brought to you by The College Corner. It's up on YouTube. It's also up where you get podcasts. Remind me, Chase, to load it into Podbean. Yeah. It's brought to you by The College Corner, two locations in the Jackson area, one in Ridgeland, one in Flowood. You can also go to collegecornerstore.com and find them on Facebook and Instagram. So whether you're tailgating in Oxford or home gating with friends and family, The College Corner has you covered for game day, the largest selection of Rebel gear in central Mississippi.
Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. Tyson Drugs in Holly Springs, G&M Pharmacy there on South Lamar in Oxford, 662-236-2222. They deliver locally in the Oxford area, and they offer MedSync for your prescriptions the same day each month and take care of you one trip to the pharmacy or one delivery there from G&M. So, again, find out what your community pharmacy can do for you, 662-236-2222. Go to give us a second. Go to Chris Lee here on the Rafters Music and Food Hotline.
So you told me to get him on Skype,
that's
right?
That's correct, yes.
All right, let's see. Okay, yeah. I kept thinking we've talked to him before.
We have, yes.
Yeah. He's not online.
Okay, we'll give him a second.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot.
It's all good. I'll send him a text.
Okay. I didn't even check the softball score. I just saw that mentioned.
It was 3-0 State at one point.
It was 3-1 little while ago.
It is still 3-1 in the bottom of the seventh, so it's a last half inning here for the Rebels.
Is this a single elimination tournament?
I believe it is, but I'm not 100% sure. Ole Miss is safely in the NCAA tournament, however, though, so their season is not over here. They will be a 2 seed, I would assume, next week somewhere.
It looks very dry there. I'm surprised they're able to play the game.
Where did we say they were? Tuscaloosa, right?
Yeah. I mean, the sun's not bright. Conditions don't appear to be perfect.
He's on now.
Okay.
Turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. Let me see. Make sure that I've got my mic. Okay. Yeah, I've got the good mic hooked up.
Okay.
So.
You are live, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
No, you're good. All good.
Usually like to tell people. It's kind of like, hey, you're on speakerphone. You know, just let you know. We'll jump right in, Chris. Ole Miss, Vanderbilt. Obviously, it's been a pretty rough week for the Rebels. Gunnar Hoglund out for the season with a UCL injury. I saw the update from Tim Corbin here about an hour ago or so about Jack Leiter, that there's no final decision on his availability this weekend. However, they said he was moving forward to potentially pitching. What do we know about that?
The way that I interpreted his comments, and coaches are really protective in these situations, right?
Sure.
It sounded to me like he was optimistic that he could pitch. I detected a little bit of optimism in his voice. Now, other people took that differently. Apparently, the Hustler writers, their first take of it was a little more pessimistic. But I went back and listened to it again. And by the way, people can hear it. I've posted it on the front page of andysports.com. The YouTube video is free. The first minute or two or first few seconds of his answer cut off, but you can hear it for yourself. It sounded to me like he's very hopeful Jack Leiter could pitch this weekend, but he certainly stopped far short of a prediction.
What's his deal? Is it, does anybody know? Is it shoulder? Is it elbow? Is it?
I don't think so. I'm not hearing injury. I'm hearing more tired, soreness, those sorts of things, which sometimes there's a fine line between that injuries, you guys know, but I have not heard, and they're very guarded and quiet about these things, so you have to listen sometimes for them to slip out elsewhere. But from everything that I've heard, which has not been a lot, it sounds like he is just more tired and fatigued. Look, you've had conditioning issues across the country. You're seeing it in Major League Baseball as guys are getting hurt, and you've got a group of guys, frankly, who just on this team are not used to this kind of workload for practice and going this deep into the season. So, look, coaches have a lot to, I guess a lot at stake is a good way to put it, and you want to be very careful and guarded in what you say. But the way I interpret it today is that he's optimistic that he can pitch at Oxford this weekend, but who knows, right?
You know, obviously plenty of documentation stuff on different Vanderbilt things, but, you know, Tim has really got his career and his reputation on pitchers and preparing them for the major leagues, being cautious with them. And even the way the guys come back after their college careers are over, is it, do we recall this in the past? Have there been times where he's shut down guys for simply fatigue? You obviously are much closer than me to it, but I was just trying to kind of think back when he's been this this cautious with some guys prior to this season.
You know, he mentioned it with Rocker the other day, and I'm trying to remember when it was. It must have been earlier in the season when he was a freshman. I think that they limited him a little bit at the end of last year. That kind of became a blur at the end, but they really have done a pretty good job on the whole. They have not had a lot of pitchers who had been hurt during their careers. I mean, they've got everything down to a science. They monitor things. You know, another thing that's interesting, his dad is in the stands all the time. You know, watching everything. So dad's always there too. Like you said, I think that they've got a lot at risk. Their track record of managing pitchers has been pretty good. And I don't mean to sound like a promo for Tim Corbin of the program, but it really has not been an issue compared to other programs. The number of arms they get hurt versus a lot of other ones. I mean, I think the most high profile one was Walker Buehler, who in hindsight was not pitching at 100% health in Game 3 of the College World Series in 2015. Of course, he ends up having arm surgery and missing a year. But I think you probably got to give them the benefit of the doubt so far in terms of how they've managed pitchers, because I think they've done a pretty good job with a lot of elite arms not having a lot of injuries while they're there.
What do you make of this team? Because if they win the national title, I'm not going to be surprised. But at the same time, I watch them, and they have a little bit more of a pitching depth issue than maybe we're used to seeing from a Vanderbilt team. And their offense isn't bad. It's just a little weird.
Man, that's a great question. Because if you say, how good are they? I would say, well, give me some things that I can know going in. They not have Jack Leiter? Do they have Jack Leiter pitching like he did his last three starts, or they have Jack Leiter pitching like he did for the first 2 months? And then I would say, can Isaiah Thomas stay healthy? And they've got a lot of guys hurt. I think they've got probably 2 to 3 times more injuries than any team that I've ever had covered. My sense is he really knows how to manage teams for the postseason. We saw his teams flame out really early in his career. There was 07, there was 13, and then in 14, they win the conference. They don't win the conference. They finish sixth and win the national title.
Right.
I guess the point I'm making is there's a lot of variables this year with inexperience and injuries and things like that. But he has really started to manage very well for NCAA tournament play. So I think you give him a little bit of benefit of that. I watched him. I feel like if they are reasonably healthy, with Rocker and Leiter, they're really tough to beat if they're pitching the way they can pitch. I think they've got a really underrated bullpen arm in Nick Maldonado, who's been almost unhittable in SEC play. You saw Patrick Riley last week give them 7 scoreless innings and looked really good. And I think their lineup 1-9 is pretty good. The question is, who are the 9 going to be? They talked today. They've hinted about maybe platooning some guys because they've had so many guys who've had to play because of injury. I know that's a long answer to your question. It is my sense, though, is if they're pretty healthy, I think they're capable of going pretty deep in Omaha and winning the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be a shock by any stretch of the imagination because, frankly, like you said, they're sort of built for the postseason. I mean, in Omaha and Super Regionals, they can get by a lot if you don't lose with Rocker and Leiter if they're 100%. I mean, it's just the way those schedules work out. And in some ways, the regional is the most dangerous part for Vanderbilt. It gets easier after that.
Yeah, and the wild card for them is a kid named Ethan Smith, who I think coming in the season we thought would be their number 3 starter. He hasn't pitched since the LSU series. And he had a positive COVID test, and I don't even know that he had it, but he tested positive. And the school makes you jump through all kinds of hoops and things like that. And by the time he'd been through all that, They had to sit him out because his conditioning wasn't right because he wasn't allowed to be with the team. And everybody's talked about their third starter and their bullpen issues. You might see him in Oxford this weekend. He's a really good pitcher. You can go back and look up what he did in 2019, but he's a key part of their bullpen. I think his ERA was under 2. He strikes out probably 12 or 13 guys per 9 innings. That's the other thing. I think if they can get him back and healthy, that really solves some of their issues, and I think it also is a little bit of a hedge against Leiter if that doesn't go well.
Is Tennessee for real?
I think so. That lineup is really good. Their pitching, I don't think at top end matches what Vanderbilt's got when it's healthy, what Ole Miss had when it's healthy, what Mississippi State has, but they've got a lot of really good arms. And I think something that's underrated is a guy that can throw 6 or 7 innings and give you 3 or 4 innings, especially when you've got an offense like Tennessee's. Liam Spence has been great for them. They hit up and down the lineup. I'm interested to see how they do outside that ballpark because the home run is a big part of their game, but their pitchers give up a lot too. And I think when they get to postseason, when you're playing in pitchers' parks like Hoover and certainly in Omaha, one thing I like is teams that take a lot of walks and don't walk a lot, and that's Tennessee. So I think that they've got a game that I think translates to other parks, which I think is pretty important when you get into postseason.
I know we're just bouncing all over the place, but I'm just curious. You like SEC baseball as much as the next guy. Tony Vitello, in 2 years, he is the head coach where?
Oh, man. LSU's the one I wonder about, and A&M too. And
I think A&M is the one I wonder about if they can't get a big name inside that state, if they can't talk like a Tim Tadlock and jumping over to College Station.
Yeah, but let's play counterpoint here. Sure. Tennessee's been pretty bad for a dozen years before he took over. He can really recruit. I mean, he did that at Arkansas. I don't know. I'm not close to this, you know, the Big 12, at least not the way I am to the SEC, but I don't know. He's a guy that I like just about anywhere. I don't know where that goes because commitment to baseball is not a thing that's been a big deal at Tennessee.
No.
But they also haven't drawn 5,000 people like they're going to draw this weekend. So I'm really interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I can't see him being there in 2 years. He's a hell of a program builder. I don't know what it looks like down the line, but it just feels like, I mean, there's probably going to be 2 openings in the West this year. Like I said, you know, does that open up a carousel a little bit? I mean, I have to think he's the main candidate to be at multiple job openings. You know, of course, here's the deal, too. I mean, I don't know how long Dan Horn's going to coach, but Vitello's probably the favorite to replace him whenever that is.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to say. Van Horn, I don't know what his age is, but he's not a young guy. He's been there a while. And I think Vitello, having been there and having done what he's done, certainly that's a better baseball job than Tennessee. No disrespect to Tennessee because it's been good. But I think you have to take that job if you're him and you're offered.
Yes.
Yeah, you do. We debate it. We don't even cover Vanderbilt. Who are you taking one if you had to pick? Would you take Leiter or Rocker?
Man, a month ago, I would have said Leiter, no hesitation. But here's what's going to be interesting, guys. Rocker, his game, I'm not going to say he caters to the postseason, but when he gets in NCAA play, he's taking it to a different level. I think right now I say Leiter, but I think that's going to be really interesting if both of them are close to full health in the postseason because Kumar really turns it up a notch when it really matters.
But who's the best pitcher over a 6-month stretch? Because a Major League Baseball season, you can't get super amped every single start. You won't make it. You got to go pitch.
I think it's Leiter because he's got more pitches. But Kumar's got better control right now. And again, I don't know how much of Leiter's is just not being 100% because that tends to make your command and your control falter. But look, they both got premium fastballs, right? And when I sat and watched the no-hitter, and I sat right by my own plate because they're not letting us in the press box right now, and that really turned out to be a blessing that day.
Because of science?
Because of science,
okay,
yes,
good.
Neil.
Making sure.
he struck out, I think, all 17 hitters on the fastball, which is remarkable because, again, you remember he's not a guy that doesn't have other options, but you're watching him early in that game, and he can't command his breaking pitches. And so he just says, screw it, I'm going to throw a bunch of fastballs. And Carolina's got kids. I mean, look, most SEC teams, if they know a fastball is coming, can hit it. They couldn't. And that just really impressed me because I'm like, here's a guy who's got those other things in his back pocket, but for whatever reason, they're not working. And he dominated with that pitch that day. And he threw 124, and I think the last one was 96-ish. To me, that just was really special what he did. I think that when in doubt, I lean to the guy that's got more pitches. You know, and with Rocker, he's got that changeup that he can use sometimes, and sometimes it looks really good. He just hasn't had to. When you're dominating everybody with your slider and your fastball, and national titles are at stake, you know, right now, I think you're wise to use those. And those have been so dominant, he hasn't had to use the changeup. But I think the thing that's made it interesting is the fact that he does have the ability, I think, to throw more strikes over the course of a season than Leiter's shown so far. And the fact that he's got that other pitch in his back pocket. And when your fastball and your slider are that good, if your changeup's decent, I think that's enough to get you there. And then adding the cutter to it, which he's done, I don't know. I think the gap, I would have said a month ago again, I would have said Leiter. And I would have said it decisively, but it's gotten interesting because I think you're seeing that narrow a bit.
I just coughed, by the way. In the event that you get sick in the next couple of days, you can sue us because there's no telling what just happened.
You've always got to be careful.
You do.
I see them every day. I've been so close to them, the warts and all. What do you make of this Ole Miss team from afar?
I look at it, and the SEC record doesn't make sense to me because they hit up and down the lineup. There's so much power there. They've got good arms. I mean, I know Hoagland's not an option anymore, and you hope Nikhazy stays healthy because he's been so dominant. But I don't know. To me, I look at it, and I think that's a better team than the record. You know, and I have an Elko out, too. I mean, my goodness, that really has killed them. In some ways, I think it's a really good team, but I think I have the questions now without having your ace. Because I think with Hoagland and Nikhazy healthy, to me, that's an Omaha team, and I want to see if they've got the other arms who can step up now. But to me, that lineup is really scary.
The lineup has been much better than, frankly, people ever given it credit for. It's been a little inconsistent at times, but I think they lead the SEC in OPS, and just looking at it, it's not like they have like a top two round pick. I think the whole dang lineup's back next season, like 1 through 9.
Well, if that's the case, then they're really scary. Again, I don't know what those guys are as pros, but that is a great college hitting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you have to at least assume Elko is considering coming back. I mean, he's got time still to get the surgery, get healthy and all those things. But I do wonder a little bit. I mean, it feels like there's a decent chance he does come back. So we've got you on. Just to ask you, I know it's Vanderbilt, but Clark Lee in his first offseason as Vanderbilt football coach. What's going on across the street?
Before you answer that, I'd like to know, what did you and Derek Mason give each other as Christmas gifts this year?
Strangely enough, that didn't happen.
Really?
I actually like Derek.
Yeah.
I never disliked the guy. I just thought he was in over his head. And you guys know this. You got a job to do. And it's not explaining away for a coaching staff. I don't know that he necessarily understood that. But I wish him well at Auburn. I think as a coordinator, that's more in his lane. And I hope it works out for him.
That was a very diplomatic answer there.
That was. You got along with him better than Houston Nutt got along with me. Is that what you're saying? It was.
Maybe. I mean, I genuinely, I'm not trying to be diplomatic. I don't dislike Derek. I think he's a nice guy. I think he's a good guy. I just think that when you get in a situation where you're in over your head, and I may or may not say that applies to some other people there now too, it just kind of magnifies your insecurities, and that just makes for a really bad situation.
So what about Clark Lee? I interrupted Chase's question. I'm sure it was going to be a Pulitzer Award-winning question. He had prepared for it. He was looking at his notes. He was ready to roll. What do you think?
I think he's got a chance because I think he approaches it a lot like Tim Corbin does. And with Corbin, they manage the details. Watch them this weekend when they do the anthem and just watch how that is done. And think of that applied to every single corner of your program. And I know people talk about the scholarships and things, but that's why they win. It's because he's thought of just about everything. And I don't know that you can carbon copy somebody. I mean, certainly people have tried to do that with Nick Saban, and it doesn't work. And so I don't know that Clark can do that. I think there's only one Tim Corbin. But it's the model that I think you emulate, and especially a place at like Vanderbilt. I think his talent is really bad. I've seen some bad Vanderbilt football teams. I don't ever remember seeing an SEC defense in a long time that was as slow and as inept at the point of attack as the bunch that he's getting back. And we couldn't see the spring. At least I didn't get to go into the scrimmages that much or not at all. I got to see the spring game, and they give up 68 points in the spring game. Now, you know how that goes, right? Sometimes you've got a receiver who's dominating, and you've got a freshman DB out there who isn't going to be playing, and he gets torched a few times. And so I don't take too much away from spring games in that regard. But what I saw was a defense that looked a lot like the one that I saw last year. I think they've got some building blocks on the other side with Seals and some receivers who can make a few plays. They're not great athletes, but they can catch the ball. But I think, to me, that defense, there's as little talent on that side of the ball as I've seen in a while. And I think it's going to take him a few years if he's going to be able to turn this around.
They got any running backs that Chase can fall in love with for a couple of years? Any Ralph Webbs running around over there?
Well, they got a kid who transferred from Temple who was a freshman All-American.
You know how I love Larry Rose III, so this is like right up my alley here, Chris.
Yeah.
Let me get comfortable. Who are we talking about?
Ramon Davis.
All right. he's a starter? Is he gonna carry the
rock? I think he will. He's a little bit of a bowling ballish type back. He's about 5'9", 215.
I can feel the heat coming off Parham right now.
Yeah, because like Benny Snell was too mainstream. Like that was too much for me. We need somebody like this. You say that though. Seriously, like the ceiling still under Lee or in any type of anywhere near future is still just find a way to six, right?
I think so. I said for a long time, I think becoming Ole Miss, I think, should be a goal for them. Where Ole Miss has been a program that most years, unless it's just disastrous, is in a bowl. Sometimes it makes it really interesting. It's hard for me to see them ever getting to a level where they are, you know, just going to bowls every year and competing for the East. I just don't think that's realistic. But I also would have said that if you told me the day that James Franklin takes over, they're going to finish in the top 25 his second and third year, I would have just said, it's time for you to go find mental help. But he did it. So the wild card is the Chancellor. They have just made a public commitment of $300 million to sports, which is not something at Vanderbilt that's done ever. Most of that's going to football. I think that's a sign that they are at least willing to give some thought to caring about it. And I think they've got a lot to do behind the scenes. Their players still don't get priority registration and a lot of stuff to me that's just obvious that they've got to get done. But for once, at least you got a chancellor who cares. And I think when you have that, I think it makes probably success more possible than at least it's realistically been in a while.
What are they doing with the football stadium itself? Is there any talk about down the road, hey, we've got to address this, or are they stubbornly committed to it?
After the season, I think what you're going to see them do is they will tear out the closed end zone. They're going to put in a football operations building. And I think eventually they will do some things like chair backs on the stadium. That's not in phase one. But the first thing they're going to do is they're going to remodel that part. It'll shrink the capacity, I'm going to say, down to about 30,000. I know you got some room in the other end zone where it's open, and I think they're going to put in some temporary luxury suites or something along those lines to where they can charge some big money and give people a pretty good view of things. I've heard eventually that they might put in a suite on the opposite side of the press box, which would also overlook the baseball stadium, so you could use that for both. I don't think the stadium, in terms of doing major work to, is a priority. I think what they're thinking is, let's do things that affect recruiting and players, and then we'll win some games, hopefully, and then we'll worry about some of those other things. That's the way it's been told to me. I think they need to do some stuff, certainly. I think traffic in and out of that place has been a big issue. Now, I do think they have a plan to remedy some of that by making a food court type thing, I think, at one end of the stadium to where they don't have the concession stands right there. I think that's been one issue to some of the issues in the concourse that have been a pain to fans. But I think that's one of the things they'll do to kind of help that a little bit. But is this going to be a thing where 2-3 years from now, you know, they've done $100 million of work on things that affect fans in that stadium? No, not other than just the thing they'll put in the end zone. But I think it has been something that's been talked about.
Different subject. 5 years from now, Major League Baseball is or is not in Nashville?
Man, that's coming up a lot lately.
Yeah.
Man, I hope it is. And the interesting thing about this area is that it is exploding. I get calls and texts from realtors just about every day. Do you want to sell your house? You see properties in this area. I live just south of Nashville in Franklin. My wife was telling me a story the other day about a place going on the market and them getting 40-something offers at or above asking price the first day. It's crazy how the population is exploding here. But at the same time, you got two things. You've got, well, three things. I think there's some question about how well organized the ownership group is. And to be honest, I have not dug in well on that, so I can't speak very well to that. But I think number two is you've got three cities. Like, if I decided right now I want to go hit a ball game tonight, I could probably get in the car and be in the ballpark within the first couple innings in Cincinnati, St. Louis, and Atlanta.
Yeah.
So you're proximate to three other cities. So that's another thing. And I don't know how much MLB is going to consider that. I have to think it's a factor. And I think the third thing is we've got hockey, we've got football, we've got soccer now. It's still not huge in terms of population compared to a lot of the metro cities, although, again, that's changing fast. So I don't know, man. I hope we have it a few years from now. I think they'll have to build a new ballpark. I don't know if they'll be able to work with the minor league stadium that they just built or not. Again, that's not really in my alley of things I've covered.
And that's right there in downtown, right, the new stadium?
It is. Vanderbilt plays a couple of midweek games there a year. And it's a really nice stadium, but, like, there was talk of hosting the SEC tournament a few years ago. Well, the press box is about 10 feet wide. So they would have to tear out a couple of suites and make those into a press suite or something like that. There's, like, a lot of things there that aren't built in with that park that I don't know if they could do enough to make it a major league park or not. But it's an interesting question. And frankly, I never thought it would come up this quickly, especially after we just got soccer 2 years ago.
Yeah, I just know that the A's are they're probably not gonna last in Oakland. There's more and more buzz about Tampa, and then Major League Baseball talks about expansion as well. So Nashville always comes up. The same three or four markets come up all the time: Vegas, Nashville, Charlotte. And I just can't see Charlotte beating Nashville for a Major League Baseball team.
Yeah, and somebody else asked me this morning on another show, though. How far is the closest major league destination to Charlotte? I think there's some more distance between them
and the other markets.
Atlanta would be the closest. But outside that, there's not a lot.
I don't know that it matters if you can, I guess for the TV viewers and stuff, but I don't know that it matters from an attendance standpoint if you can get people into the stands.
Well, I mean, look, it's a sexy city right now. I mean, sure. It's about as hot as you can get in terms of popularity and that as a travel destination that's not on the beach or the mountains. So, I mean, I think it's in a lot of ways it's an easy sell. I just look at some factors like other markets that are close. And, you know, do we have enough fans in the area to, you know, to make it work? I don't know. I mean, I hope it does. Speaking from a guy who Major League Baseball is my favorite pro sport. But, you know, it's funny when you grew up here in the 80s, that was always a sport that Nashville thought it would get if it got a sport. I mean, hockey was nowhere on the radar, but that's done incredibly well. So I don't know. I hope we get it. And, you know, certainly I think it's probably a more attractive market than Oakland right now. I haven't been to Oakland to a game in 20-something years, and it was a dump then. I don't know that they've done a lot to it since. And frankly, I think that the population growth and the growth of the game in other countries, I think that you can support expansion just from a number standpoint at the major league level. So I think to me that's not as much of a problem. But I do wonder when they start putting it down on paper and they start going, man, we've got markets in St. Louis, Cincinnati, and Atlanta that are pretty close, how much that's going to matter.
Well, because at one point, this has been a decade or more ago, Louisville had like a little bit of a push there, but they were so close to Cincinnati and to other places where it goes, yeah, just geographically and in relation, it didn't make any sense, even though I think at the time, Louisville was the largest city that didn't have a football, basketball, or baseball team.
You know, the other thing, though, and I didn't think of this till just now, so much of this area now is transplants.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go to church, and I'll be sitting there talking to a group of 10 people, and I'm the only guy from here. And you see a lot of that stuff. I live on a cul-de-sac of, I think, 10 houses. I think I'm the only person on the cul-de-sac that's from here. So I think that does raise a whole set of issues that I look at it and I say, well, are you going to be able to pull in a fan base? Because you got a lot of Cardinals and Braves fans in this area, and some Reds, but not nearly as much as when Neil and I were kids. But given the fact that so many people are so new to the area, I wonder if that just makes it a little bit more possible, given that so much of the population here may not have a loyalty to those two or three teams.
Yeah, and a lot of times with the transplant stuff is like, we have someone on our thread, Ginger, says everyone, she's in, I think she said Brentwood. She said everyone she meets is from Cali. You know, so let's say you have a person who grew up a Dodger fan or a Giant fan or whatever. A lot of times they'll adopt the place where they live as kind of like their second team. And it's much easier. If you're living in Nashville, it's much easier to get tickets to the Nashville team than it is the Dodgers. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just kind of transplants become fans.
Well, and I'm sitting here going, I'm a Braves fan and have been for a long time, and my son and I watch the games together. But if we get a team, David and I will get tickets. We'll go to a lot of games. We'll certainly cheer for Nashville. I might have a hard time switching allegiances, but I think also, you know, a decade from now, it's hard for me to imagine a team in my own backyard that's not my favorite team, too. But to what you said about California, my barber, I was speaking with him the other day, and it's anecdotal, but he said, man, I cut hair of 10 people every day that just moved here from California. So we're getting a whole lot of that here in the Nashville area.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, hey, we really appreciate all of your time. As a parting gift, we're going to get you a copy of Blooms of Oleander. It's a great poetry book. We'll get that to you here soon. It's written by one of Mississippi's top authors.
So sounds good.
We'll get that to you. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks.
Chase is like, oh my God.
That's fine. All good. I had no idea where that was going. I was like, what the hell is he talking about? Okay. Yeah.
Tales of loves lost and found, as well as lessons learned along the way, are included on each page in excruciating inspirational detail.
Yeah, Daniel, I don't feel like SEC has lost anything by Georgia Tech not being in the SEC. That would not even be anywhere near what I would find attractive or sexy to get a team back in this league and have to cover it. Like, there is nothing about Tech that fits that for me. I'll take Virginia Tech over Georgia Tech.
Virginia Tech would have 10,000% better chance of getting in the league than Georgia Tech would if they
footprint
everything.
The University of Georgia not kicking and screaming and yelling.
Even Auburn. Auburn, Bill, what are you doing?
No.
I mean, it's less than 2 hours from here.
Yeah. A lot of people use Atlanta as a hub here. That's not.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, I know it's a duh statement. It's Ole Miss losing 2 out of 3 over the weekend. It's Hoagland. It's the, as you said, the rite of passage into the summer that we are having. This series has lost a lot of luster. There is very little buzz going on right now with a top five team coming to Oxford this weekend on what should be good weather and good attendances.
I tried to talk Carson into it, and he was like, eh.
I mean, it's just kind of eh.
Eh. A lot of it is just because you get yourself excited for, you know, Hoagland versus Rocker, Leiter versus McKaysey, and now Hoagland's obviously not going to pitch.
And Leiter may not pitch.
And it doesn't sound like Leiter's pitching.
Oh, you don't think so?
No.
He said he was progressing toward that. He said the problem was they haven't seen the throwing piece of that yet, that was today or tomorrow.
Well, that's pretty significant. I mean, that's what he does. He throws.
That's what they said.
I know.
So how long is he out? What do you think? I did say Corbin did go so far as to say it is not an injury.
Okay.
So whether to believe him or not is up to you, but that's
my guess is
that is very strong.
My guess is he pitches next week.
Think so?
Yeah, and then that way, if he throws a couple innings in Birmingham, so be it.
Leiter wants to pitch. Today and tomorrow will be good indicators of that. We're just waiting on the throwing piece before we decide. He needed some time to recover from throwing over the past 6, 7, 8 weeks. He called it fatigue and then added that Leiter had not suffered an injury or illness.
Is it dead arm? Kind of like pitchers go through in spring training?
And he hasn't said if it's arm or something else. Always first and foremost on your mind is keeping his health. How other people view that is up to them, said Corbin when asked about MLB scouts' potential reaction to the condition. There's not much you can do about that. You want to preserve the kid's arm and put him in a position of success, both for him and Vanderbilt moving forward. What Tim Corbin said.
Okay. Well, if you say it's not an injury, you put yourself on the record as, hey, there's no injury.
Yeah, that's what he said.
And so if there is an injury, then it really looks
bad. You have a problem at
that
point. You
look bad later.
Well, it was an injury at the time.
And if it's dead arm, usually major leaguers sort of push through that a little bit carefully.
He's not looked great the last 3 weeks.
No, he's, you know, if you watch good pitchers in spring training, they get shelled midway through, you know, almost every time. You start seeing these 14 to 11 games in spring training, it's because all the pitchers have dead arm.
Is the lack of a season last year and no summer causing that type of impact on
Sure,
this?
Could very well be.
Everybody's facing some stuff right now.
Well, they lost some of their endurance. If you run and you run and you run and then you quit running for a while, you have to rebuild the running endurance.
I know it's because of their draft stock, so I'm not really even criticizing or complaining or trying to throw shade or anything here. But this, when you look at the actual stats, what both these guys have been this season, especially in league play, look, they're damn good, but it's not unprecedented. Like you keep saying, oh, this is the best duo in baseball history, and it's like,
No, it's the draft stuff that's doing that.
Frankly, Wicklander should win SEC Pitcher of the Year. Over these two guys.
You know, I haven't looked at his numbers lately.
His ERA's lower.
Yeah.
He's not going to.
I can make a real argument for Doug.
I can make a hell of an argument for Doug. In league play, he's been better than either one of them.
And I haven't looked at, like, the kids at the top of state's rotation, what they've done.
And McLeod's been good. I mean, yeah. It's almost like they all got anointed in February, and it sticks no matter what at this point.
That's what we do in media.
I mean,
we get, by God, we get ourselves on a narrative and there's no changing.
I mean, it's not really adding up for me a little bit.
What are Wicklander's stats? I'm curious. I mean, he's pitching for the number one ranked team in the country. He's been their ace all year. I mean, they're like, what are they, 38-7 or 38-9 or something crazy?
And I think it was league play that I really was curious about. Hold on, I've got it up. And I kind of just threw somebody
Avery
out there.
Avery makes a great point. You know, you could really make a compelling argument for pitcher of the year is the Cops kid coming out of their bullpen.
Well, that's fair.
Who just closes the damn door every time they play. What does he save, like 30 games? I'm being a little bit hyperbolic, but my God.
Patrick Wicklander, 1.69 ERA.
This is in league play?
No, in overall.
Okay. Still.
53 innings, 42 hits, 11 runs, 10 earned. 58-14 strikeouts to walks. Hadn't thrown a ton. Only thrown 817 pitches. Nothing crazy. In league play, he had two bad weeks in league play, which will cause him to not win it. But I say bad. He has not allowed the worst game. His worst game of the year is against Ole Miss. He allowed 3 runs in 4 innings.
Yeah.
That's it. Otherwise.
But everybody that weekend, with the exception of Nikhazy, got hit.
Alabama, one right? run, 5.1. Yeah. One run, 5.1 innings. Mississippi State, one run, 5 innings. Auburn, one run, 6 innings. Ole Miss, 3-4. A&M, 0 runs in 4.2 innings. South Carolina, 1 run in 7 innings. LSU, no runs, 6.2 innings. Georgia, no runs, 5.2 innings.
Yeah, I saw some of his start against LSU on TV that day.
It's not really the sexiest thing in the world because of the strikeouts and the different things.
What's Cops' numbers?
Hold on.
Just curious.
Well, I mean, they're stupid.
But I'm kind of with you, though. I mean, but we're just...
One of them's going to win, but why?
We're going to give the award to Rocker or Leiter, and I'm not...
I mean, no matter what.
I'm not completely convinced they've earned it.
Yeah, I mean, like Colin pointed out on Twitter a couple days ago that, I mean, even from a 1-2 duo, you look at stats, A&M a couple years ago with Doxakis and Asa Lacy were better.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something we've seen very recently. Let's see, Kevin Copps, 49.2 innings, 0.72 ERA, 7 saves, 83-13 strikeout to walks. Oof. So 83 strikeouts and 49 innings.
Mm.
1 double, 2 home runs, and a 172 BAA.
Oof. What's his whip?
I don't have his whip.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Not bad.
Damn, you make that argument quick.
Not bad. Just saying. So, yeah, just a thought there as we move forward. Today, the podcast brought to you in part by Visit Oxford. Visit OxfordMS.com. See the events page for everything going on locally this weekend, Friday, 3 and 4 o'clock for the Double Decker Bus Tours. You can sign up for that at the Visit Oxford website or give them a call. And on Saturday, the Velvet Ditch Grand Fondo Bike Ride, a 20-miler, a 45-miler, and a 70-miler. The Destination Oxford Car Show is 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. in downtown Oxford, and the Women of Worth Market from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Armory Pavilion. Also, starting here soon in June, the Summer Sunset Series, Music in the Grove, is back in 2021. Each Sunday in June, 6 to 7:30 for that. There are 4 different occasions, June 6th, June 13th, June 20th, and June 27th.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. Spacing out for a minute, all right?
No, I was reading.
Oh, okay.
Reading. Fascinating. We're also brought to you by Pinnacle Trust. They're based in Madison, Mississippi. They've got clients in more than 20 states, advisors in multiple states as well. What they do at Pinnacle Trust is they provide detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. They treat investing like a commodity, and decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotion. So get in touch with them at pintrust.com, pinntrust.com. Mention that you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast, and you'll get 10% off your first year's fees. We're also brought to you by John Edwards, Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. Get in touch with John next time you're thinking about traveling. And what he'll do is he'll give you a list of options that you're not going to find on your own. You just give him some parameters, you give him a budget, and he'll take care of the rest. 901-494-3387 or jedwards@regencytravel.net. First-time clients save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. Also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And we're brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is home to a commercial checking account, now paying 1% interest as long as you keep $10,000 in the account. It comes with fully interactive online banking. They can also set up any local business to deposit checks from their office and not have to worry with coming to the bank daily to deposit those checks. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxford.com. bankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Anything else to those odds yesterday, or we pretty much covered it?
I think we covered it.
From a betting standpoint, Florida was the only one that made any sense.
Yeah.
I kind of thought there was something much there that made. Let's see. Yeah, let's see that. Has Oxford been hit by the gas thing yet?
The kids just say the lines are long and stuff.
But they are okay.
Apparently. I'm taking two college girls'
word for it
as sources. And they're good sources on a lot of things, but I don't know how good of a source they are on this.
You don't think they?
I would want to back up the source.
Okay.
There's some things that they tell me, I'm like, done. But this is probably not one of those things.
It's kind of any source, though, isn't it? Like, literally.
It all depends.
Oh, there was an ethics portion of that thing this morning, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'll tell you about that later.
Did I miss that?
I'll send those slides over.
I would have had a hard time keeping a straight face. I would have had to turn the video off on my Zoom.
Arch Manning's on the front of the college football page on ESPN.com today. Probably not the first time or the last time that's going to happen here in the next 18 months.
Arch gets clicks.
You're kind of tired of him a little bit.
I'm not tired of him. So here's where I am on Arch Manning.
All right.
I know because of where we are and what we do and how emotional a lot of the people that subscribe to our site are about that family and this person.
Sure.
None of that is a criticism, by the way. It just is what it is. I know that we have to be careful and we have to be right. And that means being cautious, conservative. And so every time someone writes something, like 24/7 wrote a story about him, not the Ole Miss site, the big national guy, Steve Wiltfong, who's really good, very connected, knows a lot of people. And he knows a lot of people. Steve's really good. And he wrote a story about Arch's June plans. And I saw people kind of like, oh, well, you know, this school's not listed because I'm like, no, just leave. And my response was just let it be. We don't know why a school wasn't listed. It might have not been listed because he didn't say it. You know what I mean? And it could very well be that he didn't list Ole Miss because he's been to Ole Miss a bunch and he knows he's coming later. Or it could be that he didn't list Ole Miss because he's not as into Ole Miss right now. I don't know. And so if you don't know, leave it alone. Mm-hmm. That's what I've tried to say. This is one of those kind of journalism stories that let's get it right. Yeah, from a pure commercial standpoint, yeah, God, I hope Arch Manning comes to Ole Miss. You don't think we can sell that, do you? But it's one of those things where I've said it to Zach, I've said it to you, I've said it to myself, I've said it to anybody that we're around, I've said it to Sam Spiegelman, who, you know, is pretty connected to Arch's program down there in New Orleans, Newman. Hey, let's just make sure we get it right. The two things I don't want to do is go through this process, what I think is going to be the next 14 months or so. I don't want to go through those 14 months and say, I don't think Ole Miss has much of a chance, and then he commits to Ole Miss.
Sure.
And on the other side, I don't want to do at all this thing where I'm telling people, y'all,
Ole Miss is in
it, man. They're really in it, wink, wink. It looks good. And then he commits to Clemson or Texas or whatever, and everybody goes, you guys led us on. I don't want to do that. And it would be a fair criticism if we led people on and then he didn't go. In the same way, it would be a fair criticism if we told people he's not coming and then he does. As it stands today, I don't think Ole Miss leads, but it's super early. Frankly, it's too early to worry about it. If he's going to take a whole bunch of visits, he's going to go through a whole football season, he's not going to do anything for another 14 months or so in terms of a commitment. So it's not. I don't think the whole who leads for him matters that much right now. And we'll see. I mean, I think we'll have a much better idea, say, December than we do today. And so while we could milk it and get lots of clicks and stuff out of it, I don't know that it's the greatest business decision in the world.
And I'm all over the place here in the last few minutes. I saw this on Twitter, pulled it up. the NFL comes out with its primetime schedule. A little surprising. Shows you there is some just franchise buzz in general beyond the quarterback. Saints get 5 primetime games in a post-Brees era, which was kind of interesting. I didn't necessarily expect that.
Oh, I think the Saints are bigger than Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Now, they weren't a few years ago, but they are today.
But from a ratio standpoint, this is interesting. The Indianapolis Colts get screwed over more than any other team in the league from a home-away primetime standpoint. The Colts, over the last 5 years, have had 14 primetime games, which isn't very many, but nonetheless 14. 2 at home and 12 on the road from a scheduling standpoint.
Wow.
Kind of interesting. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know. I don't know.
They're just kind of a franchise. They're just sort of there. There's not a lot of sexiness to them.
Week 2, the Giants travel to Washington. Yet another short week road game for the Giants. They're 17th in that time period, the most in the NFL. So the Giants get screwed over the most on short weeks.
So the Giants get a Thursday night in week 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's correct.
I saw where the Bears get a Sunday night to start the season.
Did they?
Yeah, Rams.
Yeah, number of short week road games during that time period. The Giants and the Redskins have 16 right now. That'll be 17 for the Giants in this season. The least, the Detroit Lions have only had 2 during that.
Wow.
Now, some of that, I think, is because they play on Thanksgiving and they get the bye breaks around it to not make it as big of a deal to them.
I saw the Thanksgiving games this year. Is Ole Miss State on Thanksgiving this year?
I don't know. I honestly have no idea.
I saw the Thanksgiving games this year are, I think it's Bears, Lions, Cowboys, Raiders.
Oh, really?
And then there was a good night game Thanksgiving night. I can't remember what it was.
Number of games the opponent had extra time to prepare for, meaning who has less time than their opponent. The Philadelphia Eagles have had to deal with that 43 times over that time period. 43.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bunch.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough in there where you're kind of like, hey, like what's up?
What was
you find it?
No, I'm gonna find it. I know exactly where I can find it. I was trying to think where I could find it, and me thinking is a difficult thing. Did you see where the Patriots entire thing got released?
Oh no, really?
Yeah, their whole schedule got leaked.
Yeah. Bills Saints.
Yeah.
Thursday night. Yeah.
That's a good game.
In New Orleans.
That's a good game.
Yeah. Bears, Lions, Raiders, Cowboys. Christmas Day, Browns, Packers, and Colts, Cardinals.
No.
NFL encroaching on that Christmas Day thing.
2 years in a row, the NFL said, you know what? We're so big now that we don't really care about it.
We don't care.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah. They could avoid it and let the NBA have their day.
The NFL, the NBA's really look. The NBA's got some soul searching to do, and I know we're not getting on that topic and stuff, but they do. They have some real soul searching to do. I had a question in the mailbag about Major League Baseball, and unless you're a pitching freak, the game's kind of boring.
Yes. Because yeah, there are tons of home runs, but there's so much inaction and inactivity to where you're just like.
Well, it's like we had Indians Cubs on yesterday because Chris Bryant left the game in the 5th inning and the rumors popped that he was traded. And so, which was an interesting thing, by the way. You never know how you're going to feel about something until that moment hits.
Sure.
And it was kind of sadness. Like Carson and I were talking about it, and because there was a rumor that he got traded to the Mets. And Carson was like, I don't want to cheer for the Mets, you know. And I'm like, well, I'm not cheering for the Mets, after, you know, but. He was like, yeah, but I like him. And he goes, well, at least we'll always have that World Series, you know, and stuff like that. And you start talking about it, and you're like, yeah, you know, I mean, Chris Bryant will be like, that's, you always got to think about him. But we were watching that game, and Cleveland brings in these arms, 7th, 8th, 9th inning. Dude, those 101 slider in on a left-hander, you don't hit that. Think moving golf ball.
Yeah. No shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's and it's incredible pitching, but the game itself is just kind of boring. Give the NFL credit. Their product's not boring. They've made sure it's not boring. It doesn't last too long. They've shortened it. An NFL game is 3 hours and about 10 minutes, and by God, that's what it's going to be. And TV loves
their Sunday schedule. Perfect. We got the noon games. We have the 3 game. We got the 3:25 game. We got the 7:15 game. Okay, and cool.
So, yeah. So if you're a casual NFL fan who doesn't get the package, you get steady football. And if you're a hardcore NFL fan,
now you're cooking.
Well, now you're cooking, yeah, because you get the you bitch your one TV.
We're doing
on
red
the,
zone. We're doing
and
the
then,
whole
yeah,
deal.
You're flipping around, and it's great. Well, NBA can't match that right now. I mean, Nikola Jokic is going to win the MVP award. I question how many casual fans out there would even know who he was.
No shot.
Well, that's where we're getting with the NBA, my man. You gotta be careful. It wasn't that long. It wasn't that way.
Yeah.
LeBron's getting a little older. Think about it.
Who's winning the MVP?
Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, no clue. Literally no idea.
Yeah, I mean, he should win it. Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be in the mix, but...
Know him.
But Giannis has won 2 in a row, and Giannis is not really... Is Giannis a household name?
No.
In the way that Aaron Rodgers is? There's nothing the NBA can do out of season, really, to do what the NFL did with the draft.
Yeah, sure. What they do with everything. It's just all perfect. It's
I mean, they're
awesome.
Releasing a schedule today, and it's just like, ooh, this is great. They're going to release schedules, man.
Yeah.
And you generally know what the schedule's going to look like. I mean, if you're a Saints fan, for example.
We've known the opponents for a
you've
while.
You've known the
opponents. There's a formula,
yeah.
I can tell you.
Yeah. And so they're going to release the schedule, and everybody's like, on pins and needles about it. That's power.
Yeah.
Nobody else is doing that.
All right, we will talk to you again soon. Thanks to Chris Lee for joining us today. Ole Miss and Vanderbilt this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I know the Saturday game's at 4, 6:30 on Friday. I forget the Sunday time, but nonetheless, 3 in a row here in Oxford this weekend. Ole Miss and Little Rock here at 4 o'clock today. The media, obviously, the more important thing, but Ole Miss plays Little Rock. Josh Mallett's on the mound for the Rebels today at 4 o'clock. So, appreciate everybody. Hope you have a wonderful day. It's very nice outside, and we'll talk to you again very soon.